The Sports Illustrated Media Podcast is brought to you by the SeatGeek app, the easiest way to find a great deal, pay for your ticket, and go to your seats. Download the SeatGeek app and enter our code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, for $20 off your first purchase. We're also sponsored by FanDuel, the leader in one-week fantasy football, with more winners and more payouts than any other site. Enter promo code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, at FanDuel.com for a bonus match of up to $200. SeatGeek and FanDuel as we start the NFL season.
You're going to think I'm crazy. I'm drinking at 1 p.m., but he gave me the best advice. He looked at me straight in the eye, and he's like, what do you have to be scared of? This is what you've worked for all your life. Have you ever been afraid of being, dying, trying to make your dream come true? Snap out of it and go own it. That's what he told me.
Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, where each week we interview members of the sports media and interesting people about how they consume sports media. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Bette Marston. I want to thank everybody for the incredible feedback for the previous podcast. Jermell Hill, Bomani Jones, Fred Gadelli have been the last couple. Thanks so much for the numbers. Thank you for listening. We're going to continue to try to get really good guests. If you want to hit us up with suggestions, comments, feedback, criticism, hit me up on Twitter, at Richard Deitch, RICHARDDEITSCH. My producer is Bette Marston. Hit her up at BETTEMARSTON. We always want to get feedback for this podcast. You can follow us on SoundCloud as well as iTunes. If you like it, please tell a friend and subscribe. That's how we will continue to stay in business. Today, my guest is Antonita Collins. She is at ESPN, goes by the name of Toni, and she is one of the highest profile Latina sports journalists in the country. She works for ESPN's digital unit. So when you are on ESPN.com and you'll see video at the top of stories about something that's broke, oftentimes you will see Toni as the anchor there. She joined ESPN in 2013. As part of that digital media team, anchors news and analysis video segments pretty much for every sport. Also does some enterprise reporting and interviews. She did a really, really interesting feature with Yasiel Puig. I think it was last year. You can find that online, just Googling either name or both names, I should say. That was a pretty interesting interview because it's not seeing Yasiel Puig in a way you probably haven't always seen him. Prior to ESPN, Toni was a sports anchor for Univision Deportes, worked in Dallas where she covered the Mavericks, the Stars, the Rangers, the Cowboys, FC Dallas. She has worked in markets where she has broadcast and reported news in both English and Spanish. That is just an amazingly impressive thing. When she was in the Rio Grande Valley in Texas, she'd be working for Univision in Spanish, and then later that day would anchor Fox's for Fox affiliate in English. So that is pretty impressive stuff, in my opinion. And I've been wanting to have somebody on this podcast who could talk about the experience of Hispanic sports journalists, how Hispanic athletes are in this country. And I was pretty psyched when she decided to come on. Her mother, by the way, is also really incredibly famous. For those of you who are familiar with Mexican journalists in Mexico or Mexican journalism, Maria Antonita Collins has a 40-year career in journalism in that country. You know, she's sort of the equivalent of a Leslie Stahl, Barbara Walters, etc. So she comes from journalism royalty. All right, Toni Collins is in Connecticut somewhere. And without further ado, let's bring her on. Okay, so we now bring in Toni Collins, probably from somewhere in Connecticut. And I'm glad she decided to do this podcast because I wanted someone who could come on who can talk about the experience of Hispanics in sports journalism, how Hispanic athletes are covered. And, you know, as I said in the intro, she's one of the more high-profile Latina women in the sports media. So I'm excited that she's on. Toni Collins, welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Thank you so much, Richard, for having me. I felt like I was back in high school and the cool kid asked me the prom, the nerd. I was the nerd, so this is awesome.
You must not be listening to the right podcast then, because that would be the first time this podcast has been called the cool kid. But listen, we appreciate that. All right, I want to start off with, you know, you have an interesting job at ESPN, and I briefly gave the overstrokes at the top, but I think it's far more interesting if you can describe to the listeners what you – I know every day is different because the sports content is different, but in a given week, what are your responsibilities at ESPN?
Well, I came on board with ESPN as a digital anchor and reporter, so my main job there is dealing with ESPN.com, the stories that come down, whatever the writers are sending us or breaking news that SportsCenter does not cover because of a given reason that they're either focusing on Roger Goodell or another big story. So whatever comes down on the front page, we want to personalize it with videos, so then that's where I come in. And, for example, yesterday, just with roster moves in the NFL, we had Mark Dominic come down and help us break down the move or his thoughts, or I think Darren Revell writing something about Gronk's heart call. So something that ESPN will not cover, so then we'll interview Revell, get more about that. But then at the same time, I'm also helping out with the Borbis side, since I speak English and Spanish. So yesterday, for example, I was doing the NFL sub-segment, and then I had to tape some One Nación, which is ESPN's platform for bilingual viewers or fans. And we were talking to Mario Kempes, who he's a legend in Argentine soccer.
Right. World Cup Maradona, right.
Yeah, so we were talking about him, about Chicharito. So it depends on the day, but I have a balance between English and Spanish, and I'll help the Spanish side with breaking news for videos or interviews at the same time. So I get to fluctuate between both on a daily basis.
Yeah, I want to get into your background a little bit, because I find it fascinating, people who concurrently work in English language and Spanish language as you have. What language are you more comfortable working in professionally?
You know what? It's so weird, because I think in Spanish, but when I was doing full-time Spanish, my vocabulary wasn't as expanded, and I think I would lean towards saying random words in English, but I think more in Spanish, and sometimes I feel like my vocabulary or what I want to say doesn't come across right in English because I don't have the right words. But that's what I've been doing. I'm going on my third year now at ESPN, and that was basically the deal when I came in. You know, they're like, you're not there yet with how you express yourself, but we can help you hone that and be able to express yourself how you do it in Spanish, because in Spanish I'm more lively, I feel more comfortable. That's what I've been working on. So that's the only tough part, being able to flip the switch at times.
That's interesting. Do they bring in, like, a, for lack of a better word, like a language coach to work with you on how you would present yourself in English on air?
No, not really. We do have, they have put me in there's a voice coach that came last year, and she saw several clips, and so she was, sometimes with me what happens is that I tend to talk really fast, and then my accent comes out, and so she was just, they give you the guidelines of what to work on, but not on a daily basis or anything. This was like about 7 months ago, so, I mean, they give you the feedback, it's up to me to apply it and work on it, so. Well.
Right. This is pretty amazing to me. Following graduation, you became a reporter for KNVO TV 48 Univision in Spanish, right? At the same time,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, at the same time, you're working as a reporter for the Fox affiliate in the Rio Grande Valley in Texas. So you're reporting the 5 p.m. news in Spanish. You're then anchoring a 9 p.m. newscast in English, and then reporting a 10 p.m. newscast again in Spanish. I mean, that to me is sort of remarkable dexterity. What was that experience like for you? Almost, it seems like, on an hourly basis, having to morph between these two languages, dealing with two different audiences, dealing with, I would imagine, far different stories. That's a pretty amazing journalism experience.
Richard Owen knows it. That's so funny you mentioned that. Yeah, that was my stomping grounds, the Rio Grande Valley. It was crazy. At first, I started with no TV experience because I started in radio. Before that, I got that job, and I thank my lucky stars and every angel that guided me because I was a board operator in St. Petersburg. So I sent out a fake demo. I mean, I just did some stand-up. Some guy helped me put it together, and Callan bit. And like you said, I did both. I started with just reporting in Spanish, and it was like every story from like drug busts to people crossing the border, kids, I mean, being smuggled, homicides, murders. And then my English is, I think it's a little, you can understand it, so they started using me for Fox. And it was flipping whatever I was doing in Spanish, I would flip it and turn it into English. And then, they made me, I mean, I did everything there. It was the best experience because I could do weather, I could do sports, I was anchoring. And then at 10, they made me like turn it on another story. I think I was just at the right age too. I was in my early 20s and had nothing but that to focus on that. And it was a great experience. It was crazy. The stories were crazy. I wish I could show you my demo. You will crack up. Oh, my gosh.
And then so from there, is that when you went to Univision Dallas to cover the the Mavs, the Cowboys, FC Dallas, Dallas Stars, et cetera?
Yep. Yeah. So I see that Univision has an opening. I send my resume. I'm a minor in sports management. I went to Mount Union, small Division III in Ohio. And the lady, I'm so lucky. She's like, well, we can come audition you, this and that. I go up there and I get the job. And it was 2011. I got the Rangers lost, but the Mavericks won against Miami. I'm from Miami, so I went back to my hometown. Got a great experience there, and it just like trickled. It was like a snowball effect because then Univision decides to, they open up their sports network, and they ask all local anchors to send a demo. I get picked to go down and launch what they were trying to. It was first, it was I don't know how to say it the correct way. They wanted to reach a different audience, so they hired like American bosses and suits, but that didn't work. And then Mexico came in, so it was just a different, but they wanted for us to also focus on American sports in Spanish. That's how I got to the Deportes Network.
That's interesting. When you were in Dallas, and let's forget about baseball for a second, the Rangers, but when you're covering the Cowboys or the Mavericks or the Dallas Stars or the soccer team, are you the only Latina sports reporter in those locker rooms? Or one of maybe you're the only one. Okay.
One. So this. Yeah, well, for the Cowboys, it was one in print, one more lady, but it was all men. I remember all men.
Okay, so this is a unique experience in that this is, if we go back 25 years, if you're an African American sports reporter, you may be the only African American sports reporter in a locker room. So what, when you're in a locker room and you are the only one of your ethnicity, what is, and especially you, you're in your 20s, you're young. Well, how do you feel as a reporter? What is that like?
For me back then, it was intimidating. You ask me now, it's completely different. Very intimidating. I swear to you, I sweated more than any man running a 40-yard dash line there. Like it was, but at first, just because you feel already like you're being judged. I mean, a girl, does she know her sports? Does she know what she's talking about? Is she just a pretty face? And then Univision, you know, the stereotype. But I think that the B reporter started seeing the dedication, and then me, I actually reached out to them. I remember reaching out to Richie Vera, to McMahon and stuff, and asking them for advice, for help. And it kind of, by the end of that year, they, like, took me under their wing. Jesse Stan, I mean, all these reporters that I would just reach out to, and they saw the interest, they saw the dedication, and it wasn't just a thing of the moment, you know?
Right.
They actually helped me feel better and gave me the confidence, and then they were like, hey, check this out, or you know what? I'm one of the, even the Deportes side, and the men's are like, for the Cowboys, they, hey, check out the Tony Romo in this rep, he's not doing, so they would help me, they would guide me, and that's what helped me, and that's what motivated me to keep doing it, just seeing there how they were so helpful with me.
There's, you know, sometimes if you talk to young women reporters in sports, they always feel the pressure of having to prove themselves because of, you know, an unfair stereotype of walking into a locker room. You sort of, you know, unfairly, I would say, but sort of the reality is ultimately – sometimes minority reporters will feel double. They'll feel not only the pressure of being a woman, but the pressure of being a minority. Did you experience some of those things, at least early in your career working in sports?
Completely. I definitely did. Now, not as much. Now it's a different kind of pressure, but I felt it from day one, the first locker room experience I had. And even as in radio, when I did the board operator, that they were like, sometimes let me go out. And it was in the Buccaneers, and I felt that there. I was the only girl, too. And just the looks, the stares, but you got to own it. You got to own it and be confident.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that, yeah, I mean, obviously, sort of, you know, once you fake it till you make it is like a great expression in America. At ESPN now, and obviously you moved to ESPN, you've now, as you said, been with them for a couple of years. Do you consider yourself a pioneer at ESPN? Because there historically have not been many Latin women with a significant on-air presence. And I realize you are still very young, but you are unique given what you do there and what your ethnicity is.
Pioneer sounds so, I don't know. I didn't realize it until recently when I keep getting like on Twitter and on Facebook. I'm very open about like responding and stuff. And a lot of girls email me when I go to the NHA, to the Hispanic Association, like right. about this, about the opportunity that I have with ESPN. And then I sit back and realize that I don't see any more of me either. So I hope I'm doing them justice, and I hope I am somehow showing them that it's possible that, I mean, we're just working hard with it, you know? So it's crazy to me. I think ESPN has been a great platform. They really want to, they're making strides in this whole diversity, and they really want to give us a chance. So I really appreciate that.
Will we see you more, Tony, on some of the traditional over-the-air ESPN shows heading forward, whether that's over-the-air SportsCenter, whether that's an appearance on something like a His or Hers or Around the Horn? I know at this point you are, you know, you have your responsibilities on the digital side, but mm-hmm. is it your hope that you ultimately will morph to opportunities on the, like, the linear television side?
Oh, completely. That's my goal, at least, my personal goal. Where I started in digital, Cassidy Hubbard started, Michelle Steele, Prim Serpapat. I've seen how they do it, and we call it the bullpen down in digital. You know, once we get the call, we're at Aroldis Chapman, man. I know that with baseball tonight, they're actually giving me the opportunity to host this coming Saturday, that's 30 a.m. So I'm excited. I've been shadowing a lot of the guys there for raps. I know it's just the voice, but I'm so proud of it that I get to just do highlights or join the team. I'm doing tonight as well with baseball tonight, but I've been doing that, I've been shadowing that. I'm hoping to find my way as well. I feel like sometimes maybe they don't know what to do with me because I can do both languages, and I've hosted in Spanish the show called Redes. I've done, they sent me to Pan American, so I got the reps there, so hopefully I can find my niche as I'm getting these opportunities now.
That's great. So would you say, this Saturday, baseball tonight?
Yeah. So it's a 2:30 one. It's a late one on the East Coast, but that'll be my first time hosting baseball tonight. I did FC a couple times when the main anchor wasn't there with the World Cup, and I got to work with Julie Foudy and Christine Lilly and Kate Margraff. They were great. They were awesome. So that was a really good experience as well.
That's cool.
Okay. From that to hopefully this.
So for the listeners that know, we're taping this on September 9th. Tony's show will be on late September 12th. So if you're hearing this afterwards, she's either knocked it out of the park or her career is over and she's out of work on September 14th. So we wish her the best of luck. In doing my research prior to this interview, I saw the piece that you did with Yasiel Puig, which I thought was really interesting. You know, you drove with him in Los Angeles. You interviewed with him. And again, he's not an easy interview subject, as you know better than me. But I found that he was a little more open with you than I think he has been. And this is just my observation with an English speaking, let's say, white reporter. One, I wonder if you thought that was true. And then two, I want to get into a little bit of covering Hispanic athletes. So what was your what were your impressions doing that interview? Because that's not a guy who does a ton of interviews, and it's and he's certainly not a guy who's the easiest interview.
Richard, that was, I mean, I have a short career, but that by my any, that was the toughest, I think, interview I've ever done, I've ever going in to prepare for, just because the first time the first time I meet him is with a magazine. They were doing a cover for the Cuba issue, and they were going to hire a translator, and I had just come on board literally like 2 months before, and they're like, well, we have Tony, she's bilingual, she can go translate for them. So I went, met him there, did a couple segments with him. He's an intimidating guy. He's so reserved. So then he gave an interview to ESPN just recently, the one that we just did, and so we decided to go to spend time with him a whole day without a sit-down. He opened up after a couple hours, and it was a different side of ESPN. Like, when that camera turns on, I'm telling you, you get a break and you get somebody completely different. And then when we went to do the sit-down in spring training, you think, okay, if I've seen him several times, we've built this rapport, like, he's opened up. When we get to the sit-down, he was just, like, firing back at me with short answers, with smart-ass answers. And but as we kept talking and as we kept I felt like we could relate just because, well, I grew up in Miami, but my mom was married to a Cuban raptor. So I kind of, we were talking about that. It got cut off, obviously, at the piece, but we were talking before I started talking to him about his defection and the many times he attempted to leave. We were talking about my stepfather. He left in a raft with his son. He tells my stepbrother, hey, I'm so sorry to bring you to your death. But that was, I can understand to an extent the desperation in Cuba. So we were talking about that, and he did not want to talk about it, but his silence and his expression towards me, spoke to me more than ever. And I think he's just like an onion. He's like an onion with so many layers. Once he really wants to talk, Richard, he's going to be such a compelling story, I'm telling you, man, because I don't know I can only imagine what he's gone through. And I know he acts like he's this tough, he doesn't care, but he has so many layers. The one that we saw when the camera was off was a complete different one. Like a regular 24-year-old kid.
Interesting, because I think even in the, even in his silence and even in his one-word answers, especially about sort of reliving that experience, he did offer viewers something that they could take away.
Yeah.
So I think
definitely. And then after the interview, so my mom's crazy Mexican on me all the time. She called to see how I did because I told her I was nervous. She calls me, I go to the hallway, and I tell her, you know, thank God, everything well, thank you for praying, Mom, everything went well. He overhears this, he comes out, and he's like, what is it that you were praying about this interview? I'm like, well, you know, I tell him, you're not the easiest person to deal with, hello. And he gave me the best advice. You're going to think I'm crazy. I'm drinking at 1 p.m., but he gave me the best advice. He looked at me straight in the eye, and he's like, what do you have to be scared of? This is what you've worked for all your life. Have you ever been afraid of being, dying, trying to make your dream come true? Snap out of it and go own it. That's what he told me. I mean, for people who don't know, who think Yasiel is just crazy, he was actually, that resonated with me. It was crazy.
Yeah, that's good advice from a 24-year-old. I like that. Mm-hmm. You mentioned your mother. Your mother is Maria Antonetta. I apologize for my,
you said it good.
My lousy mi poquito Spanish, Espanol. So your mother, Maria Antonetta Collins, or Antonita Collins, has a 40-year career in journalism. In television, radio, and print, she was the first correspondent for Univision's LA bureau. She was she's been a news anchor for Univision. She hosted her own show on Telemundo, which in English is essentially Every Day with Maria Antonita. She's very, very well known in Mexico. I'm sure most of the people who are listening to this will not be familiar with her, but. She is essentially, I mean, maybe the best way I could describe it is like Barbara Walters or Diane Sawyer in Mexico. So we're talking about that level of journalism acknowledgement or fame. So my first question for you is, how did growing up in a household with your mother What were you sort of destined to be in this profession because you were around it so much, or she obviously had a great impact on you, clearly?
Totally. I mean, I wanted to be, my dream was to be, I love McDonald's, a McDonald's teller. I thought I could have hamburgers for life, but then no. I grew up in a newsroom. My mom was a single parent. So my father stayed in Mexico, and when we moved to, as I was born in the United States, we moved to Mexico, so I was 9 for her job. She was in Televisa, and we go back to Univision. She comes back to Univision in 92, but I mean, I grew up in the bureau, and when she was a reporter, I would go to stories with her when she was transferred to Miami and she was in a weekend anchor. I was in a newsroom. I grew up there. It's all I've ever known, and it's seeing her and the way, like, she relates to people, to communities, and what she does and how happy it makes her, and that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to do it to some extent. I don't know in what field, but God had everything to do. Like, I hope to one day be 1 ounce of what she is.
Did she was she interested in sports, and she imbued that in you, or was that something that you just ended up discovering on your own?
Actually, she covered baseball when Fernando Valenzuela was around. So they sent her. She was a general reporter in Televisa, and they're like, "No, there's this kid that he's making it. All the Mexican who wants to know what he's doing, like everything." So she was assigned to Fernando Valenzuela when the whole Fernando Manilla went on.
Right.
So that's where she, and then she has a passion for baseball. She's the one that would take me to the parks when I was little, and that's where it started for in sports for her. And then she moved on to general assignments again, et cetera. But yeah, I got bit by that bug from her.
It's interesting. So she covered the heights of Fernando Mania, which, I mean,
yeah.
I was young then, but that, you know, Fernando was such a big, and not just an L.A. figure, but a national figure for a couple of years.
Oh, my God. And, like, my mom was telling me, it wasn't just about what he was doing on the field, on the mound. It was, like, she had to cover, like, when he got married, when they bought the house wherever in L.A. Like, she was, like, the E! News version of Mexico. Mexico was eating it up. Like, whatever Fernando did, like, she was there. Like, she knew all his life.
I love that. She's the precursor for E! News. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, E! News or TMZ, one of the two.
Is she? Is it intimidating to be in the same field as a parent who has achieved such success?
You know what? When I first started, yes, it was. Because especially I started on Univision, which was her home, too.
Right.
I got a lot of, like, oh, you got the job because of your mom. It was a lot of those, that, and, like, you're never going to be as good as your mom and this and that. But once I think the maturity finally kicked in, and it's like you can't compare yourself. Like, you're always going to be somehow linked, but take it for the positive. And, you know, her advice, she's very hard on me, but she's good. And I'm lucky to have that feedback from her. But yeah, she, for her, this is new. Because, like, I was under the Spanish television and Spanish umbrella, and she kind of knew what it was. But for her, me being away and ESPN, and so it's new for her as well.
That's interesting, because obviously she could give you a lot of advice on the mechanics of broadcasting, reporting stories. But she is not someone who's covered 2015 sports in America. So when she is watching your... You know, and obviously she could, you know, you could email her your YouTube clips or whatever when she's, or, you know, she's just going to ESPN.com. But when she's watching you and offering advice, does the advice have to be away from the content of what you're doing, or how does that work? Because she would, in theory, she should be an incredible resource, but the reality is she may not have the same kind of knowledge base that you would have on, you know, the Saints, the Cowboys, the Dolphins, et cetera.
Oh, totally. So, yeah, now it's changed. Before, she had full free game to help me out with what the content and everything and give me advice on that. Now she's just more of a visual and more of, like, how comfortable I am. She hates it when I use prompters, so she's like, "Your prompter is not your friend. Just tell me, maybe you're having a conversation with me, child." And also, like, for, like, in Canada, for a lot of stand-up, she's like, "Quit giving me the boring same stand-up, you know, I'm behind an arena. Do something different that stands out." She's very, like, more of the visual and of nowadays. That's and it. Of engaging and of, you can use your hands, or, like, don't, like, hold the mic too tight. It looks like you're about to, like, have a heart. Like, it's more of the visual now, so, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but she always has something to say, as a woman.
Well, you know, she's, or a mother. I want to tell everybody about the best new way to find an amazing deal on football tickets. It's called the SeatGeek app. And when you use our code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, you'll get $20 off your first ticket buy. The SeatGeek app takes less than a minute to download, and it's free on iPhone and Android smartphones. Now, SeatGeek does a ton of things other ticketing sites don't. You can they aggregate from big ticket sites. So just like when you search for flights and hotels online, SeatGeek pulls in ticket options from hundreds of sellers, creating a one-stop shop for sports and concert tickets. When you shop on SeatGeek, you're seeing virtually every ticket option available for that game, all on one page. There's no need to go anywhere else. They also have the Deal Score feature that ranks every ticket in the market with a 1 to 100 value score, plots the best deals on a color-coded interactive map of the venue so you can easily identify the best ticket values in the building at a very quick glance. Finally, SeatGeek's mobile app makes the ticket buying process seamless, easy, and safe. On SeatGeek, you can store your credit card, and once you find the ticket you want to buy, you complete the purchase with just two quick taps. No faster way to buy tickets. So to redeem your promo code and to save $20 off tickets, download the free SeatGeek app today. Enter promo code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, in the app. SeatGeek will then send you $20 once you've made your first SeatGeek purchase. If you want to go see the NFL, college football, any of the best concerts out there, use the SeatGeek app and enter our code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, to save $20. All right, so when you are, you know, you're assigned to the digital unit. So when you are doing stories that are going to air on ESPN.com or video that's going to air on ESPN.com, do you approach that differently than you would, say, if you were on over-the-air ESPN and ESPN2? And if so, how so? I'm curious how if a digital anchor does things differently than a over-the-air anchor.
You know what? I think the biggest difference of that for me is the time that we have to prepare. Like for a digital segment, our stories can come down within minutes of each other, and the producer's already calling the reporter or trying to figure out or whoever it is that we're going to talk to. So I have less time to prepare. And it's really like for a TV spot, I feel like when I do these baseball reps, like I have a good 5 hours to read up or prepare or, you know, talk more at length and back and forth ideas with producers and hear what kind of angle they want to go. In the digital world, it's really fast for my experience, at least. What was it, last Friday, we had with all the roster cuts, you know, coming down really fast, and NFL Live is not till later in the afternoon. We're trying to cover those on the webpage, and it was just like, they were just coming down, and I'm not going to lie to you, I don't know everything, or I know most of the things, so it was like getting the research, and that's the biggest thing for me to be prepared, but it's less preparation time, more relying on the producer and what angle they want to take. Also, like I've learned to just ask the analysts that they bring down or the reporters, like, you know, what angle should we go on this? And it's a different dynamic just in the sense that it's so quick and it's really just reacting to the news that's coming down. I feel like on TV, at least for what I've done so far with One Nacion and with baseball as well as the Pan American Games, I had more time to prepare, so I had more of an opportunity to bounce back ideas and talk about different things.
Are you doing any? You know, a couple weeks ago, I wrote about Max Berrettos, and he has a new podcast that he's doing, and you know, it's with her name escapes me at the moment.
I think Mari, she's from ESPN New York.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I wonder if, you know, and that's pretty cool because the Max was telling me that the podcast may be like 75-25 English-Spanish. They'll go back and forth in two languages. Have you made any inquiries at ESPN to become part of the audio or podcast division? Because it strikes me as that might be a medium that you'd be really good at.
You're really good, Mr. Richard. we're in talks of me and there's this other Deportes co-anchor that we have really good chemistry for Freddie and I doing a podcast just like that as well. Starting it as a podcast, you know, we have a great example with Jamel and Michael with his and hers, and Freddie is more of a social media more of what's going on in Twitter and stuff, and we have really good chemistry. So we are in works of coming up with a podcast like that as well.
Yeah, look at that. Yeah. Just totally guessed. Nice guess.
Yeah,
by me.
You got it.
I'm glad you referenced Jemele Hill. That was my last podcast guest. And I didn't mean to interrupt you. Were you about to say something?
No, Jemele, gosh, I love her. Because so with ESPN, Eileen has been so good to me in this sense. So they're starting they started a mentorship kind of program. So they link up new anchors with seasoned people that can help you out with for anything. And I got the opportunity to be linked up with Jemele. So Jemele, it humbles me that as busy as she is, because, I mean, that woman is nonstop. I don't think she sleeps 1 hour. She has taken the time to, meet with me after her show or after coming back from trips just to talk about how I feel, what I'm trying to, find my, as I find my niche or who to talk to. Or she has been my quote-unquote mentor in that sense. And as a woman, as a minority, and in a company as ESPN, that sometimes the four letters tend to intimidate at times. You know what I mean? And new, right. New talent. She has definitely taken the time to show me hey, don't we're doing sports. It's supposed to be fun. You know, you find your way. You got my bag. She's really cool. I really like her.
Wow, I didn't know Jemele was your mentor. That's interesting because I was going to ask you she talked a lot about some of the things that she faces on social media. I mean, some of the very negative things that she gets, race related. And a lot of that obviously comes from the fact that she is unafraid to offer opinions. She's one of the rare women in the business who's an opinionist, and it triggers off people's opinions. Obviously, when you get the elements of clowns and racists going after her, that's absurd. Mm-hmm. But she can be provocative. What is been your experience, Tony, on social media, both good, bad, and indifferent?
It's been mixed. Mixed because I have gotten the whole racist tweets, go back to the kitchen, to where you belong, cooking and cleaning. Problem is that I don't know how to cook, so they're already I feel bad for them. But I do get that, especially now too with baseball. It's me with pronouncing names, how I've grown up and how I would feel wrong, Richard. My mom would come fly first. I mean, I would feel horrible to say David Ortiz or Salvador Perez. I can say it, but that's not me. I say Salvador Perez or Adrian Beltre. So I got a couple of little backlash on that from American or for Anglo sometimes. But then you go and see who's sending you the tweets, and you realize, they're at home. And I mean, you're not going to please everybody. I'm not trying to disrespect anyone as well. But I've learned to stop kind of letting that get to me. Just realize where the criticism is coming from. And if it's coming from my boss or something, then okay, I'll take it. But it's never been an issue with my boss or anyone at work. So it's interesting. Twitter can be such a good and bad place.
Definitely.
But then again, at the same time, I get a lot of support from the Hispanic people seeing me at ESPN, and not on the deportive side, on the English side. So that makes me feel great that the Hispanic community is very family and very, you can do this type of thing. So they see someone, one of their own, in the American market. They're very proud. So that's also the good feedback that I get on it.
Yeah, and it was interesting. Just I can tell you that when I let people know on my feed that I was going to have you on, I heard from a lot of Hispanic followers who were really psyched. That was pretty interesting to me. Again, this may totally not be true, but I'll ask it just because it's of popular culture. Have the social media comments gotten any more divisive or angrier since Donald Trump has announced his candidacy, given some of the things he has said about Mexicans?
You know what? I feel like it startled, I think, the Hispanic community, obviously the Mexican, but then the other Latino community. And it brought up a conversation that I really hadn't seen before. The tweets towards me and that stuff, no, I think it stayed the same, but it just showed the power of millennials and Hispanics and how it brought up that conversation, and now it's a main topic. And I just, it makes me feel like sad for him just because of the, but I guess, I don't know. It's a tough one. That one's a tough one.
Yeah, and I don't want you to get into politics. And the only reason I ask that is because of your mother's prominence in Mexico.
We between us and mom, we were like, what? It just took us by surprise. But at the same time, just because we know how the Hispanic community is, like, we got just so generalized, but we're a humble, hardworking class. We're all I was even more proud to be Latina and even more proud to be able to do what I'm doing and represent the community at the level that I am right now.
Yeah, and again, we won't stick to politics. I will say, as we're taping this last night, Donald Trump getting booed in my city of New York, not a surprise at all.
Oh, man.
Yeah, how, here are the final sort of two topics I want to get into. And I realize this is a broad question, and it's not like you should be speaking for every Hispanic reporter. But I do want to ask you how you view the coverage of Hispanic athletes in the U.S.
I don't see it as too great, just because I don't know if it's because Anglo reporters at times can relate with the culture or where these athletes come from and the backgrounds that they have. So that's why I think there is an opportunity for bilingual reporters, be male or female, that they can be that relatable link with the audience to their athletes in that sense. I mean, I think we're showing that we can cover the traditional American sports and that Hispanics are part of those and that there's more than just, you know, what they're doing on the field, that they're just like the Anglo athletes. So I feel like we're missing out on so much that could be made relatable to the viewers at home. And that's why there's an opportunity, I think, for bilinguals to be out there and be able to get that. Like, I think with ESPN, the reason I was able to maybe get a little bit more than others just because of the understanding of the culture, of the way of expression, of the way that we're brought up and as a Hispanics, you know. So I think sometimes they're not represented as 100% as they should be.
Yeah, that's well said. And one of my great regrets, and this is a personal thing, is not continuing taking Spanish after high school, which I took for 4 years. And by the time I was a senior, I was pretty, I mean, I don't know if I was fluent, but I was getting close. And it's one of the things, especially in sports, that I think would be an incredible asset for me. So I would ask you, do you think if, and it's never going to be required, obviously, but if quote-unquote Anglo reporters learn some Spanish, or even made an effort to try to converse with Hispanic athletes in their native language, do you think that would make a difference in what the coverage ultimately is, you know, what the final product of the coverage is that viewers and listeners and readers would see?
Oh, my God, completely. I definitely think so. Just because it's the, just like those Hispanic athletes are making the effort to learn the English and be able to communicate with the Anglo reporters, I mean, for them to see that it's vice versa, I think it would open another avenue right there for a different chemistry or different, we'll feel more comfortable or understand them. Because I think in some, like for Yasiel was telling me that he didn't understand, like, what was the interest of reporters for him, because back in Cuba, they didn't give that much care or attention to them. It was just more like, it was a complete different relationship that he had with the Cuban media than what it is in America. So I think they were like, even like they would be able to connect or understand at some point, it would be a different type of feeling in the interview.
I'm giving you the opportunity to interview any two people in sports in the world. Who would you choose and why?
Oh, man. Any two people in sports, alive or all alive, obviously, right?
You know what? We'll make it fun. One alive, one dead.
One alive, one dead. The dead one, I always wanted to interview Roberto Clemente, just because I would have loved to, like, known how it was when he played, how it was to play ball back then, what he did and what he represented for the Hispanic community. And alive, that's a good one. I would have to say live. And in Spanish or English, it could be both.
It could definitely be both. Actually, given your skills, I think you should do the interview in both English and Spanish. Although, you know, I shouldn't say that because that's, let's say you wanted to interview someone who speaks French for whatever reason. Might be tricky to do that interview in Spanish.
Oh, my my gosh. All right. You know what? Don't think I'm weird. Troy Polamalu.
Troy Polamalu. That's an interesting answer.
Troy Polamalu, just because he was so quiet off the field and such a force on the field. Just the way he managed his career and everything. I would just love to have a day with him. I don't know. It sounds so weird, but yes, that would be it.
I would not have expected that. Not that I had any expectations in the answer, but that totally is not who I would have expected. All right, and finally, you've been on a pretty fast track because you're at ESPN at a young age, and you are on the path that, as you mentioned, people like Michelle Steele and Cassidy Hubbard were on. They are now, Michelle Steele appearing on SportsCenter, Cassidy Hubbard hosting many different studio shows. So ideally, whether it's 2 or 3 or 4 years from now, presuming you would like to stay at ESPN, what do you hope to be doing?
I hope to be doing baseball. I really love that sport. Because I had a minor in sports management, I wanted to be a translator for the Hispanic athletes. But I hope to one day either be used in the field or some way be part of the team of baseball tonight. I see Jessica Mendoza, and gosh,
yep.
I mean, to me, that's an inspiration. I know I sound corny, but that's a girl that, like, works hard. Like, when I've shadowed that, she's in the green room, she's listening to the conversations between the analysts and the output, the input that they give each other, and how they break down plays, and how she's quiet, but when that camera turns on, what the knowledge that she brings and the poise and the charisma, I hope to follow in her footsteps, not as an analyst, but obviously, but as a host, or be able to somehow work with the baseball team. Now, if something else, I say this, right, but everything changes within a year or two, but right now, that's my goal. Like, I really, just the way Carl Ravitch, Jesus, man, the guy is a human machine, just how he hosts as well as Advert. I hope to one day, like, follow in their footsteps.
Nice. Adnan will probably listen to this. He'll enjoy the he's a good guy. And I'm glad you mentioned Jessica Mendoza, who has worked very, very hard for the opportunity that she's gotten this month. And while replacing Curt Schilling was probably not ideal in terms of for her path, that when she got the opportunity, she totally killed it. And I think she will be in a prominent position next year at ESPN doing games on one of those teams. Okay, so we will look for you, hopefully, over the next year to 3 years, doing more baseball, either for Baseball Tonight or some other place.
Thank you, Richard. Amen to that.
Yeah, amen to that.
Thank you.
All right, so Tony Collins has been the guest on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I had no idea that Jemele Hill was one of her mentors. So look at that. We've actually had the mentor and the mentee back to back on this podcast. That's very cool. I mean this sincerely. You may not think of yourself as a pioneer, but as you mentioned, I think there are a lot of young women, in particular, a lot of young Latina women who are in their early 20s or just starting out in college who want to do what you do, and you give them someone to shoot for. So it really is an important role that you're playing, and we wish you the best of luck as you head forward. Tony, thank you very much for being on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Thank you so much, Richard, and not to get sappy, thank you for being an example of, you know, what journalism is and following it. So thank you, and thank Ben and everyone. Thank you.
Okay, the NFL is back in action, and it's your last chance to join FanDuel for week one of the NFL season. Now you can play with up to $200 in bonus cash using our code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A. Now, you've probably heard of FanDuel somewhere. Here's what it's all about. FanDuel is the leader in one-week fantasy football with more winners and more payouts than any other site. They will pay out $75 million a week during the football season. A lot of people don't want to do fantasy football because the whole season seems a little just too much of a time commitment. So FanDuel is the perfect solution. You can draft a team anytime, drop into tournaments for weekly cash prizes. The entry fees start at just $1. Over a million players have won money playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. Now it's your turn. So you go to FanDuel.com, click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner using our code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, sign up now. There's a special offer for new users For every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. That's a bonus of up to $200. The offer is only good for the first 50 people that use the code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, so don't get left out. Again, the code is M-E-D-I-A, MEDIA, FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season. That's FanDuel.com. Okay, back in studio with Bette Marston. Our thanks to Tony Collins for jumping on the podcast. You know, Bette, as I said at the top, I've been wanting to have a Hispanic sports journalist on for a bit. And now, again, not that you're trying to sort of fill these quotas where you're having a African-American journalist on one week, a Hispanic journalist on another week, but it's, Tony Collins has a really interesting story, just given what she's covered. Certainly her family story is amazing. And just what the coverage of Hispanic athletes are in this country and what it's like to be a Latina sports reporter in either a locker room or at a place where there are not many Latina sports reporters. So that she's very interesting to me. She's young. I think she's only 30 or so. And she's got an incredibly bright future. I mean, the ability to conduct interviews in multiple languages, to be bilingual, is just, I don't know, that impresses the hell out of me.
I have to say up top, one of the most impressive things to me is the ability to speak multiple languages. It is so valuable in journalism and in all careers in life. As someone who, some people just have that ability to pick up multiple languages very easily. And I am always jealous of them. Like you, Richard, I took Spanish all through high school, but I was certainly nowhere near, maybe conversationalist by the end. And I even took, I studied abroad in Prague one summer, took a little bit of Czech.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Languages just don't come easily to me. So I am incredibly impressed by Toni and her. She's a valuable resource for ESPN.
Hell,
and
yeah.
She should, milk that for all it's worth. And,
yeah.
I think that she, like you said, she has an incredibly bright future. And it's very impressive. And I hope that, we find more journalists in the future who, take advantage of their ability to speak multiple languages.
Well, two things. One, it's an asset you can market for money. The fact that she speaks two different languages is a money skill. And hopefully, I don't know who her agent is, or she has an agent, I assume she does, that the agent is smart enough to sort of use that. And then secondly, what's been interesting about ESPN is they do have this sort of farm system where you can go from being a digital anchor to getting on television. As she mentioned, Michelle Steele, Cassidy Hubbard are people who essentially had her job before and then moved up. So I would not be surprised to see her hosting Baseball Tonight. I personally don't think the audience cares if she has an accent or not. This is 2015, not 1779. If you know your stuff, you know your stuff.
And I think that, she mentioned that it's natural for her to say David Ortiz, with her accent. And
right.
I think the players appreciate that.
Yeah,
and the viewers
definitely.
Should appreciate
I agree.
It as well.
I don't think you need to Anglo that. I mean, maybe some consultant, sports television consultant, would say otherwise. But
I like how she turned on her American actor, whatever accent, though, and said David Ortiz as opposed to the way it should be.
It's television.
I can't. I'm
it's
not
going to try. A little bit of performing in television. We're all performing in some sense. Yeah. All right, Bette, listen, I know you have to go do whatever you have to do. You have a very busy job with the start of the NFL season. So let us cut it off here. Our thanks to Tony Collins for joining this podcast. For my producer, Bette Marston, this is Richard Deitch. Thank you to Panoply. Thank you to Slate. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.